إنما مثل أهل بيتي فيكم كسفينة نوح، من ركبها نجا ومن تخلف عنها غرق.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبو القاسم محمد. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. As always, it's an honor and a privilege to be here amongst you participating in these programs. Over the last few nights, we've been looking at different stories from the lives of various prophets and what we could learn from them. We're concentrating on one verse of the Quran, where Allah introduces our prophet as a role model. Now, this is a specific verse where it's only talking about our prophet, but we're generalizing the theme of the verse to other prophets as well and other imams, inshallah, in the future nights. The verse is this: لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ لَمَنْ كَانَ يَرْجُو اللَّهَ وَيَوْمَ الْآخِرِ وَذَكَرَ اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا. In the Apostle of Allah, there is certainly for you a good role model or exemplar for those of you who desire the Lord, meeting the Lord, and desire the last day, and remember Allah constantly throughout the day. Remember Him a lot. Now, on the first night, we talked about Prophet Adam alayhi salam and the satanic deceptions and how he was deceived by Shaitan to eat the apple from the tree. And we looked at that story, we looked at different aspects of that story, we compared it with the Bible, and we looked at a few different deceptions that Shaitan uses with us in our own lives and how to defend them. Second speech, we looked at Prophet Noah alayhi salam, and we looked at him having strong tawakkul and reliance upon Allah, which would allow him to build a ship in the middle of a desert and have trust in Allah that he's doing the right thing. Then yesterday we talked about Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam and how the story of when he destroyed the idols in his village, and how this was a very innovative way of spreading religion and spreading the message of Allah to the people, and how we should be inspired by that, and we should think of innovative ways to spread Islam to the community and the country that we're living in. And also, we looked at one hadith which talks about how we should spread Islam through our actions, through being sincere, as the brother mentioned in the introduction to the speech. So we've reached there. Today, inshallah, we're going to talk about Prophet Jesus alayhi salam. So if you've noticed, I started with Prophet Adam, who was the first prophet, and then I went to Ulul Azm prophets. We're skipping Prophet Moses alayhi salam, just because I wanted to give more time to Imam Hussein on the last nights. So inshallah, he'll forgive us. Now, which there was actually a really good one with Prophet Musa alayhi salam about brotherhood that I wanted to mention, inshallah, on another time. Now with Prophet Jesus, we're going to look at one short story, very short story from his life, and see how it can relate to us. Then we're going to look at a couple of hadith about how Jesus lived his life, right? How he lived, just brief descriptions of his status in this world, right? Then we're going to see how he totally rejected the world, and he didn't want anything from the world at all. We're going to ask ourselves, is this what Islam wants from us? Are we supposed to live how he lived? And then we're going to look at some of the traditions that talk about not what's it called? Not being attached to the world, to the dunya. When you look at what is the dunya, what is the akhirah? Is it just a general translation, you know, life in this world and life after we die? Is that what the ahadith mean? Or do they mean something different? So we're going to look at that and we're going to try to see if we could maybe get a different perspective on these traditions. So if you're with me, please recite a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So the first brief story about Prophet Jesus alayhi salam is very, very brief. So he was walking along a path and he saw a man on the floor, sitting on the floor. This man was paraplegic, so he couldn't walk. He was paralyzed in his legs. He was suffering from leprosy, so he was ugly. And someone who's suffering from leprosy, they get very, you know, hideous bumps on their faces and their nose falls off, or maybe the doctors could tell you more about it. And then also he was blind. So he was suffering from many physical ailments, right? Where, to my knowledge, all of us here are in better health than that person. Now, Jesus walks past him. And as Jesus, alayhi salam, is walking past him, he hears that this person is praising Allah. Right? So he's praising Allah. He says, "Praise be to Allah who has protected me from trials which have afflicted most men." So Jesus was astonished by that statement. He's like, wow, this person in such a terrible physical state is thanking Allah for trials that he's been saved from. So Jesus asks him, what are these trials that God protected you from? He says, he protected me from a trial which is of the greatest of trials, and that is unbelief. Right? So Allah has protected me from disbelief, meaning he's a believer, he's always been a believer. Right? And he's praising Allah for that. Now, at that moment, Jesus touches him, and through Allah, a miracle, he was cured of all his physical ailments, and he became one of the strong followers of Prophet Jesus alayhi salam. Now, what could we learn from that? Just brainstorming, two things I figured. One is thanking Allah for our faith. This is something we might not do a lot. Right? It was said I'm a convert to Islam, so I wasn't born a Muslim. And when I was a teenager, I became Muslim. So before that, you know, I didn't have anything to do with religion. Then I became Muslim, and alhamdulillah, I thank Allah for that. And I've been praising Allah for that. And inshallah, I'll continue. Now, I get a lot of statements by Muslims, and there's nothing, you know, bad intended, no ill will. But a lot of times people will come to you and say, oh, mashallah, you're a convert, you know, you're a real Muslim, not like us who were born Muslims and things like this. I always hear this. Converts, by the way, hate hearing that, so next time you see a convert, don't tell them that. But one thing is, that was always in my mind, is that look, I converted when I was 16. For 16 years of my life, I didn't have the tawfiq to know anything about Islam or the Ahlul Bayt or get the Quran or anything. Where you guys who are born Muslim, not everyone here was born Muslim, but those who were born Muslim, from the first day of your life, you've been shown Islam. People have been talking to you about Islam. You've, inshallah, you haven't been a disbeliever in your life. And that's something to praise Allah for. It's something all of you have. But you should thank Allah for this. That you were born into good families. You were born into religious families. You've accepted faith. You're here participating in the majalis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it's a big blessing that you should thank Allah for. That's one. And two, whatever difficulty we're having in life, right? This person had it rougher. Right? For us here in Australia, right? To my knowledge, none of us here are homeless. To my knowledge, none of us here are starving. Right? We all have the basic necessities of life, if not more than that. Maybe we're not all 100% healthy, right? There might be some physical ailments that some of us are suffering from. But to be suffering from everything that that person was suffering from, being paraplegic, suffering from leprosy, being blind altogether, we're definitely at a better state than he was. And him in that poor state was thanking Allah. There's always someone in a worse state than us. And we should be thankful for all of the bounties that Allah has given us. Please recite a salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now a couple ahadith, I'm just going to read them to you, about how Jesus lived his life. Actually, I'll just read one of them because they're pretty much the same thing. So this one is narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam, and it's recorded in his book Najwa Balagha, which is a very good book for us to read. So in this book, in Sermon 158, I believe, it says this: if you like, I will tell you about Jesus, the son of Mary, alayhi salam. He used a stone as his pillow. He wore coarse clothing, so he'd wore wool clothing, which would itch the skin a lot, and ate rough food. His stew was hunger, and his lamp in the night was the moon. His cover in the winter was the east and the west, meaning he didn't have a cover, right? It was just the atmosphere. His fruit and his basil, so his food, was that which grows from the earth for the cattle. So he would eat what cows eat, right? He wouldn't eat what humans ate. He had no wife to try him, no son to grieve him. He had no wealth to distract him, nor greed to abase him. His mount was his feet, meaning his horse or his car was his feet. He'd walk wherever he wanted to go. And his servant was his hands, so no one would, you know, do anything for him. If he wanted something, he would do it with his own hands. Right? Now this is how Jesus lived his life. Think about such a lifestyle in today's world. If someone in Sydney was living this lifestyle, what would we call them? Homeless. Right? They'd be homeless. He's someone who sleeps on the floor, on the earth, with a rock as a pillow. Right? He eats grass and he eats just whatever cows eat, hay or whatever they eat. I don't even know what they eat. Right? He's someone who is completely living or completely rejecting the world. Doesn't want anything from this world at all. Right? Think about that. In this world, we would totally overlook him. We wouldn't pay any attention to him. When we see homeless people on the street, do we pay attention to them? We just walk by them. We don't even look at them. Right? There's experiments, social experiments done with homeless people, or like with to see if people would pay attention to homeless people more or less than what they call normal people. Right? And there was one very interesting social experiment. It's on YouTube. You could check it out. I don't know what it's called, but I'm sure you could find it. Where the same guy, right? So it's the same person. One day he wears homeless clothing, so he wears old clothing and presents himself as a homeless person, walks into a very crowded area, pretends to have a heart attack, and falls on the floor. Right? And you see the people just walk right by him. Like, this person could be dying. It looks like he's dying. Right? He was a good actor. And they were just walking by. They couldn't even care. They didn't even look at him. Right? Then the next day, he puts on a business suit, coat and tie, goes to the exact same place, pretends he's having a heart attack, falls on the floor, and within 5 seconds, people rush to him every time. Right? The only difference was his clothing. The only difference was that people thought he was homeless the first time, they could care less. He's a businessman the second time, oh, let's help him. That's it. Right? Homeless people, we give no attention to. But that was Jesus, alayhi salam. That's how he led his life. Right? If he was here, we would totally reject him. Inshallah, you guys would be better than me and would recognize him. I probably wouldn't see it. Now, question. Does Islam want us to live like Jesus did? Right? We're looking at, the women say no. We're looking at, what's it called? The prophets as role models, right? This is how Jesus led his life. So are we supposed to imitate that? That's a question. It's a valid question to ask. Now the answer is no. Right? In Islam, we don't have to give away all of our belongings and whatever money we make from our jobs to give to the poor where we have nothing for ourselves and our families. Right? That's not what Islam demands from us. But what we can take from what Jesus, how Jesus lived his life, is we could take a, not necessarily a disgust, but a disattachment from the world. Right? We could learn not to be attached to the material world. And that's what I want to talk about today. So this not being attached to this world. And I'll start the conversation by a tradition from our sixth Imam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So Imam Sadiq says, one who passes his morning and his evening in such a way that the world, the dunya, be his biggest concern, Allah ordains poverty in between his eyes, so you know he's not using his brain, and causes his affairs to become disjointed and dissipated, while he does not gain anything except for what was ordained for him anyways. Right? So this person wakes up thinking about how to make more money and thinking about the world and thinking about how to gain more out of this world materially. And when he goes to bed, same thing. And all he cares about is that he's never thinking about the hereafter. Right? We're not talking about effort. We're talking about what he's thinking about. So always he's thinking about this world, never the next, never the akhirah. So Allah says, Allah will make his affairs disjointed. Right? He won't be comfortable, number one. And number two, he won't get any more than what was ordained for him anyways. So all of this thinking doesn't do him any benefit in this world. And he compares it, right? As for the one who passes his evenings and his mornings, while his biggest goal and concern be the hereafter, Allah will put contentment in his heart and give wholeness and unity to his affairs. So he'll make him comfortable. Right? Now, this tradition used two words, dunya and akhirah. And I want to examine these words. Because these words are important. And these words are mentioned a lot in traditions. So we have traditions, which we'll go over in a bit, which totally rebuke the dunya, the world. Say the world is terrible. Stay away from it. It's the cause of all sin. Right? Then you have traditions which say good things about the world, about the dunya. Right? Inshallah, can everyone recite aloud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Please recite a louder salawat to console the heart of our living Imam, Imam Zaman alayhi salam. Now, let's look at the dunya, the world. Because we have these conflicting ahadith about the dunya. Right? In the traditions which compare the dunya and the akhirah, they're not necessarily comparing life in this world to life in the next. Rather, they're comparing The akhirah meaning that which gets you closer to Allah, and the dunya meaning that which doesn't get you closer to Allah. Right? So dunya is a term for anything in this world which doesn't bring you closer. So it could be sin, which would bring you farther away, or it could be money and wealth and, you know, whatever would distract your attention away from Allah. Right? Of course, with the wrong intention. Now, where akhirah would be that which brings you closer. So let's look at it in this way. So when we come across a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is talking about how good the world is, it makes sense. Because he's not comparing now the world to the hereafter. He's talking about the world itself. And in the world, for a moment, who uses the world correctly, the world is beneficial. The world is important, it's valuable, right? And we could learn this from a tradition from Imam Ali, and again from the Najwa Balagha. So he says this, he says, indeed this world is an abode of truth for him who appreciates truth. It's a place of safety for him who understands it. It's a mine of treasure for him who collects provisions from it. Meaning what? The believer who performs acts of righteousness, who worships Allah in this world, right? This world becomes a mine of treasure, right? All of the rewards that you'll get in the next world come from your actions here, right? You won't reach any of the, you know, luxuries and pleasures of the hereafter if you didn't do anything to deserve it here in this world. So this world is valuable for us. Right? It's a house of instructions for him who draws lessons from it. Right? We could look at the world. We could examine it. We could look at the beauty of different aspects of the universe. And this could draw us closer to Allah. Right? We could take lesson from the world to draw our hearts nearer to God. It's the house of prayer of his angels. It's the place where the revelation of Allah descended. It's the marketplace of those devoted to him, and so on and so forth. Right? The dunya in and of itself is not bad. And this dunya is when it's not compared to the akhirah. Right? So when the dunya, when in this tradition, he's not saying the dunya is this, and then the akhirah is something else. He's just mentioning the dunya and these positive aspects of the world. And that's how we use it. Right? Whereas when the traditions, as I said, when the traditions come and they say, you know, the dunya is bad, or the first tradition from Imam Sajjad comparing someone who thinks about the world and thinks about the hereafter, the dunya and the akhirah, right? That means that which brings you closer to Allah and that which doesn't. So traditions, for instance, Ra'su kulla khatiyya hubb al-dunya, which is a tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, which means the cause or the love of the world is the cause of all transgressions, right? The cause of all sins, basically. What that means is this, that aspect of the world which doesn't bring you closer to Allah. Right? So not everything of the world. Because the world, if the aspects of the world which we could use to get us closer to Allah, we should love that, right? We should, if there's an aspect of the world which will make us gain proximity with Allah, for instance, the Imam, for instance, angels, the Kaaba, the holy masajid, the holy places, even life, like actions are considered part of the world too, so worship. All of this is things that we should love, right? And they're part of the world. So loving this won't cause us to sin. Rather, loving and being attached to that which doesn't bring us closer to Allah, that will cause us to sin. Right? Does that make sense to you? Hopefully it makes sense. Imam Bakr alayhi salam, a tradition from him, he says, the destruction that a pack of wolves would do to a herd of sheep without a shepherd would be slower than the destruction of attachment and love of the world would do to your heart and your faith. Right? So meaning, once you become attached to the world, it destroys you. It destroys your iman. Destroys your faith. Right? Once we cling to something which won't bring us closer to Allah, where we're thinking about it and we're concentrating on it and that we're revolving our life around it, and this isn't something which brings us closer to Allah, it's a problem. Right? Now, does that mean we shouldn't work? We should only stay at home all day and pray? Right? We shouldn't worry about making money? Right? No. Because everything you do in this world can be considered worship, apart from sin. It depends on your intention. If you're still going to school, right? You could have the intention that I'm going to school to learn, to get an education, in order to benefit the Muslim Ummah. Right? Now, every day you go to school is worship. Every minute you're at school is worship, if you keep this intention. If you're going to work, and you're making money to support your family, right? Every second you're at work with the intention, I'm going to work to provide for my family so we can live a comfortable life and worship you. Right? Then every single minute you're at work is worship. If you don't have a family, you're going to work. You could say, I'm going to work to gain money to save for my future life, or to save to go on a ziyarat to Imam Hussein, or whatever intention you have with your money. Right? And then every minute you go to work becomes worship. If you perform wudu before you sleep, right? You're in all the night is counted as worship. Right? Worship is not only prayer. Worship is having a sincere intention to perform an action for Allah. And you could do that all day long. Right, so working could be not for the dunya anymore, not for, you know, it's not something that would not bring you closer to Allah, but rather it's for the akhirah, it's something that would bring you closer to Allah. Even making money, right? Even buying a house so your family could live in a secure area, right? All of this could be worship, right? So it all depends on intention. Now, if one decides to go after the dunya without this correct intention, where they care about luxury, or they care about money, or they care about some aspect of the dunya, right? One of the tricks of shaitan is that you'll never be satisfied. He will constantly make you want more and more and more, no matter how much money you have. Now, I don't know everyone here, so I don't know if anyone are multi-millionaires in this audience. I would probably assume not, but there might be. But I know in America, there's a few people who have a lot of money. One of them is in the news a lot these days, Trump, Donald Trump, running for president. So he has, I think, between $4 and $5 billion. Billion, it's a lot of money. US dollars too, which are more than Australian. Right, it's a lot of money. Right, now, he's not satisfied. Right, he's old too. Like, he's got a, you know, he's rich, so he makes himself look somewhat presentable. Not really, but a little bit. But he's old, and he still cares so much about making more money, having more power. He wouldn't be running for presidency if he didn't want power. Right? Even though he has $4 or $5 billion, it's not enough for him. He wants more. Right? And this is clear. And of course, there's no support for him whatsoever. Right? He's a bad person, so even though I'm from America, don't think I like Trump. Now, he's what's it called? There's a story that I don't know if it's from traditions or not, but I remember reading it in Islamic books. So I can't quote it as a hadith, but at least it's in Islamic material. And it says that if someone was to gain power over the entire world, right? So they have dominion, they have their hands reach across the globe and everything is theirs in the world. And they realized that there were people living on the moon, right? They would still desire to get that from them. That even having the whole world wouldn't be enough if they knew there was something else to get somewhere else in the universe. They would still want it, right? And this fits in line with a tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So this tradition states, مثل الدنيا كمثل ماء البحر. The world, the dunya, is like seawater, right? When a thirsty person drinks from it, it doesn't do anything but increase his thirst until he dies. So the world is like that. If we indulge in the pleasures and luxury of the world, we'll never be satisfied. We'll never reach a stage where we say, yes, you know, I have everything I want. I have a Ferrari, I have a beach house, I have a holiday home, and that's it. I don't need anything else. You always want more and more and more and more, right? And this is another one of the tricks of shaitan. Now, to wrap it up, it's not easy to not be attached to the world. Right? So a lot of times we say, don't be attached to the world, as if just saying it makes it happen. No, this is very difficult because we're programmed in infancy to become attached to the world. As babies, right? All we care about are objects in the world. You can see little toddlers and their toys, right? They'll hold on to that toy like no tomorrow. It's theirs. They see something they want, they'll scream, they can't even talk, but they're pointing, they're screaming for it until they get it, right? At a young age, all we want is the dunya. As we get older, our desires and pleasure also add to this mix, right? So the way that human beings are brought up is we want this. So it's not easy to decide that no, the hereafter is more valuable. I'm not going to go after the world, rather I'm going to go after the hereafter. Now, one of the ways and one of the methods that Allah uses to try to entice us to the hereafter is all of the descriptions of heaven, right? In the Quran and in the hadith, there's plenty of descriptions of heaven. Why? Because He wants people to desire that. Right? Palaces and mansions and gold and silver and rivers and nature and I don't know, everything you could imagine. You have everything. Everything that you'd want in this world, you have in the next world. Right? Anything that you could desire that you would want here, you could have that and more in the next world. Right? And this is what's shown to us. So why is it that we're still attached to the world? Right? What would make us detach ourselves from this world? So the ulama say that there's one thing, and one thing only, and that's to increase our faith. And that might seem silly, but when you think about it, it's a very interesting concept here. Why? Because when you're struggling for luxuries of this world, they're always deficient, right? And you're never satisfied. You know you won't be satisfied. But when you compare it to what you could have in the next world, it's infinitely more, right? So they say there's fruit in the next world and there's fruit in this world, but the fruit in the next world is, you know, a million times better, right? And that's just fruit. Fruit isn't very exciting, I know. But the things that we could have in the hereafter are much more. So if we would sell all of that luxury and all of those mansions and all of the things we could have in the next world for small little luxuries in this world, there's a problem with our faith. We might not really believe that that exists in the next world. And that's the point. We say we believe, right? None of us will say, oh, I don't believe in the hereafter. Oh, I don't believe in heaven. All of us say we do. But our actions sometimes are different. Right? And that's why we need to increase our faith. And that's why Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, when he asked Allah to see resurrection, it's not that he didn't have faith. He knew Allah could raise the dead. He believed this. He wanted to witness it so his faith could increase. And that's when Allah told him to slaughter 4 birds and mix them up, like what's it called, ground them all up and mix them all up and put them on 4 different mountaintops and then call them, and they all came, and the birds, you know, reappeared and they were resurrected full of life and came back to him. Right? He did this not because he didn't believe, rather to increase his faith. Right? So that's what we need to do. So how do we increase our faith? Right? Again, it just seems like, oh, increase your faith and you'll be fine. How? How do you increase your faith? Really briefly, and inshallah we'll get into it more in the forthcoming nights, 2 things. One of them is a common theme, which we've been saying pretty much every speech, is refrain from sin. Right? Because what sin does is sin stain our hearts and our souls. The more we sin, the more barriers we're setting up between us and Allah. Right? So in this Muharram, let's make a pledge. Right? So all of us, we commit sins. None of us here are masoom. Sometimes we commit sins maybe on a daily basis, or at least on a semi-daily basis. Sometimes there might be a number of different sins we commit, not just one. Let's make a pledge for Imam Hussein that in these nights, we'll, not only these nights, but until next year, we'll refrain from one of the sins that we normally are afflicted by. Right, so everyone's different. People sin in different ways. So one of the sins that you do on a semi-normal basis, let's make a pledge to stop that. And I promise you, if you stop that, you'll see an increase in your faith. You'll see a change. If you're able to maintain that for a year, next Muharram, I guarantee you, it'll be different for you. Your hearts will be more prepared for Imam Hussein. Guarantee. Do it, I guarantee you, 100%. Second thing that we need to do is we need to ask Allah to help us. So we need to, a lot of times our conversations with Allah are only our prayers and du'as. Sometimes, a lot of times, we rarely have a heart-to-heart discussion with God, where we're talking to him in our own words, where we're asking him things from our own selves. Right? This is what we need to do. We need to ask Allah, in order to detach myself from this world, I need to increase my faith. Help me to increase my faith. Right? I want to get closer to you. Help me to get closer to you. I want to stop sinning. I want to stop this particular sin. Help me. I need your help to do it. Talk to him with your heart, right? Even you know, as personal as you can make it, right? If you do that, it has a big effect on you. Do the du'as as well, of course. But definitely have heart-to-heart conversations with Allah. Right? So that's my advice. So today we went over Prophet Jesus, alayhi salam. We looked at how he lived his life, basically completely rejecting anything to do with the world. Right? He lived the most humblest lifestyle imaginable. Right? Then we looked at what it means for us in this modern contemporary era, where we can't live, all of us live as, you know, homeless people. It wouldn't serve Islam well to do that. So what are our responsibilities? And we looked at different sets of traditions, where traditions are saying to shun attachment to the dunya and love of the dunya, and the dunya being defined as anything that doesn't bring us closer to Allah. Right? And that's what we need to stay away from. Of course, anything which would bring us closer to Allah, we need to indulge in that as much as possible. Whatever brings us closer to Allah, and that could be anything. Going out to dinner with your friends, right? That could bring you closer to Allah if you have a right intention. If your intention is, you know, I'm going to go out to dinner and spend time with believers, you get rewards. For every second you're at the table, at the restaurant, having fun, you're getting rewards. There's traditions we have. I was reading one today for the sisters. If a wife gives a cup of water to her husband, right, with a sincere intention, just a cup of water, she would get, I forgot the exact reward, but an enormous amount of rewards from Allah just with the right intention, right? Everything we do for Allah, and then that would serve us well, inshallah, in the next life. Now, in order for us to open our hearts and connect ourselves with the spiritual side of this dunya, we should recount the stories and the tragedies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. So tonight, we're going to look at Abdullah, the son of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and who is very young, and at his young age was able to do more than I could do in my whole lifetime. And inshallah, we could listen to this story and connect ourselves with the Ahlul Bayt through this story, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.